Tim Meadows is a longtime actor, writer, and stand-up comedian. He is honing that stand-up craft here in Austin this weekend at Cap City Comedy Club. Two shows on Friday, February 16th, two shows on Saturday, the 17th, and a single show on Sunday, the 18th. Go to capcitycomedy.com for more info and to snag the tickets that remain. Tim, thank you so much for the time. How are we doing today?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. And I need to start this conversation with an admission, because you and I both lived in Chicago around the same time, 10 plus years ago. And I was actually between broadcasting things at a certain point, was working for the Whole Foods in Lincoln Park. And occasionally, because it's a good part of Chicago, there would be celebrities who passed through. And for the most part, everybody was pretty cool with stuff. But there was one person who would occasionally come to that Whole Foods who had an exceptional reputation, was very nice to everybody, that I had the pleasure of helping make some cheese recommendations for you in the cheese department. So thank you for, despite being this the celebrity, being generous to the little person. And I hope you enjoyed the cheese.
I did. I think I sort of remember asking, I need to get a variety. And you were like, you should get something hard, something really soft, and then something like, you know, fun, flavorful, you know. And that stuck with me, because whenever I buy cheese, I always think, okay, let's get some mixture, texture-wise and flavor-wise. So thank you for that.
Yeah, that's right. Variety is a key to life, right? And prepping for this conversation, Tim, I've heard a lot about your background as somebody who came up as a comedic actor, somebody who was in improv, but you're in town this weekend to perform stand-up, and I have not been able to find a whole lot on the genesis of when you decided to get on stage and do stand-up comedy, because these things are obviously very different from one another, even though the end goal is to try and make people laugh. So when did you start adding stand-up into that entertainment career?
I started probably about 15 years now, something like that, maybe 12, 15 years ago. And I started out originally, I started out by doing improv. I was doing this show with my friends. It was called Uncle's Brother. We did it at the Improv Olympic. And then I'd come out and I'd talk to the audience in the beginning. And then I started doing like 5 minutes of sort of jokes that I, you know, was from, you know, stories I knew or whatever. And then I started building up over the time that we were doing the shows. I could do like 10, 15 minutes at a time. And then I just thought, well, I could actually just go out and do stand up on my own. I don't need to have, you know, this backup of, you know, the improv thing. So I just did it. I just started going out, doing open mics, started writing stuff, started talking about, you know, what I was going through, which was being divorced and being a single dad. That was like the original stuff that I started talking about.
So were you doing open mics in and around Chicago then?
Yeah. I'd go to Zany's and I'd go to, what's it? It's like a bar, Dottie's, I think it's called, or something like that. Lottie's or something. And then I would just look for open mics, like all over town. I did one night, like 11 o'clock one night, way uptown in like Lakeview. I did it was a pizza restaurant that did open mics, and there was only four comics there and no audience members. And so all the comics just listened to each other do, you know, the 20 minutes or whatever time we had to do. And it was the most fun, because we just sat up there and just told stories, and I got to, you know, just sort of relax, and it was fun. It was fun. It was like starting over, you know, it was like starting over again.
Was the stand up for the pizza place in the basement, and it was on Lincoln Avenue, out of curiosity? Because I did some open mics there, but I guess that pizza place has since closed in the last couple of years.
It seems like it was further uptown. I kind of remember it seemed like it was up like near Foster or something like that. Was it Foster? What street is that up there? Like Wilson Boulevard or something like that, like Clark Street, somewhere up that way. Gotcha. But yeah, I did a bunch of open mics, and so I've been doing it for a while now. And I just did some shows in Washington State, a couple of theaters there. And it was fun. I don't know. I'm knock on wood, but I just feel like I've really gotten to the place that I have a lot of material and I can take stuff in and out. I can do an hour or more. It depends on the audience, like how much fun I'm having. Just, I don't know. I did a show one night and in between I was drinking water and taking a break after doing like a half an hour. And then somebody shouted out, "Tell us about Dream Scenario," which is this movie I did with Nick
Oh,
Cage.
yeah.
And I was like, look, this is not a question and answer session. This is, I'm doing stand up. But then other people started shouting questions while I was doing my show. And then I just stopped doing my stand up. And I was like, okay, this is the only time I'm going to do this. I will take five questions from people in the audience and I will answer them truthfully. And then we'll get back into my stand up show. And it was fun. People asked me about, like, the movies or people that I work with, and I told true stories and things that I wouldn't repeat in the press, and then I asked them kindly, can I go back to doing my material? And they clapped and said yeah, but it was completely different from every show I've done, so I love doing that stuff. It so I encourage the people listening and watching or whatever to come and see the shows because they are always different. And it's the, I look like Michael Jordan used to say, the place he felt most comfortable was on the basketball court. That's how I'm feeling right now. Like the place I feel most comfortable is on the basketball court.
Oh, that's really cool that you're feeling that comfortable on the stage doing stand up. And stand up comedians talk about this need to find their voice whenever they're just getting into that art form. Did the fact that you had that improv background and the ability to act in front of cameras and on stage, did that help you start
Oh
at
yeah.
maybe a higher baseline of knowing what your voice was?
Well, didn't I really, I feel like I just found my comedic voice, like who I am as a stand-up, like just recently. I feel like, well, I sort of know what I'm talking about. But having the improv background has been great because just like I was saying with the Q&A thing,
Yeah.
I just improvised that and I never thought about, I didn't know there was no prepared questions or whatever. And we just talked, and the other thing about like working in Second City was like, you would develop this material from improv, but then when you do a review, you would do the same material every night. But as you did it every night, you could find more comedy in it, and you could also learn how to make it fresh and new every night. And I've been able to take that training, and move it to doing stand up. So yeah, it's been good.
It's interesting to hear you admit that you just recently feel like you've found your comedic voice on stage as a stand-up. Was there something that helped with that breakthrough, a bit, or just a moment of actually doing it?
I think, I would say I would say like in the last 2 years, probably, I feel like, oh, I know what I'm doing. But I would say right now I'm peaking, so catch me this weekend. But I think there was like breakthroughs. There was moments where I would have shows in like Arkansas, and I would get a standing ovation, and I was like, oh, okay, that happened once, and then it would happen again, and it would happen again, and it happens a lot, and I think the breakthrough just was sort of like just the confidence of knowing, like, I know what I'm doing. I have confidence in the material I'm doing, and I have the experience and the background. People are paying to come and see me. So it's not like, they're coming to see somebody funnier or, bigger name. It's like, I'm the person they're coming to see. So yeah, I just got more confident. And then also I started like watching other comedy specials. And comedians that people go, oh, this is he's the best, and he's the best, whatever. And I started thinking, like, as I watch them, I'm as good as them. I just don't have that, like, I don't have the Netflix special, or I don't have the deal that those people have, or the, people have been doing it at a bigger stage for longer than me. But when I watch other specials, I go, I'm the stuff I'm doing is just as funny, and I'm just as good as anybody that I've seen out there, and I'll put my name up against anybody. I don't care.
Yeah, I think the example of how you disarmed those hecklers is a great example of you handling something with grace and poise and doing it uniquely. And in a sense, you kind of gave the mob what they wanted, but it also allowed you to get back on track to continue with that performance art as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm, like I said, I feel like I know my act well enough now that, like, I don't get thrown off if something happens in the show. Like, the show's over the weekend. I actually, the second show, I did some things out of order. And then, but I wasn't thrown by it, where I was like, oh my God, I got to go back and do that thing. I was just like, oh yeah, I got to go back and do that thing. So after I wrap this up, I'll go back and do this other bit. But I'm thinking that while I'm saying other material, you know, I'm like, I'm thinking about the thing I got to say, and I'm thinking about what I'm saying while I'm saying something else, you know? And I don't know, I'm actually just finished doing yoga, which is where I'm sitting here in this outfit. But the yoga, I've been doing yoga and meditation, and it's been also very helpful because I'm very relaxed when I get on stage. I feel like I'm seeing the audience and I'm seeing everything that's happening from a different sort of viewpoint when I get into a zone, you know, like, yeah, I highly suggest people come see the shows.
Yeah, that out-of-body experience, or you being able to think about what is happening in that moment as you are saying those words, I think does speak to a certain enlightenment on stage. And I heard you in conversation with Spade and Dana Carvey a couple of years ago, and there was 2 years ago, it felt very different than now does in terms of getting up on stage and practicing stand-up comedy and maybe not having to worry about nearly as much about something like cancel culture because you step on one of those self-placed landmines, right? But does it feel now a couple of years later, not just with how comfortable you are with what you're doing on stage, but things have eased up a little bit where you are allowed to work things out and not have to worry about just losing your entire career as a result?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's eased up. Also, you know, like, I don't allow taping phones and stuff in my shows. And luckily, people haven't, you know, put stuff from my act online. Because I do and say things that are, you know, that are risk, you know, edgy or whatever. But
yeah,
my concern is not like getting canceled. More my concern is just saying things that I want to say and representing myself on issues and things that I feel honest about, you know, like, yeah, you have to see the show. I don't know, I don't want to ruin material and stuff, but like, yeah, I'm very honest about some stuff. And the thing that I look forward to in my show is at the end of every show, I talk about something that happened to me personally, and I use it as an example of how we changed over the years, and how we become distant from each other and how we vilify each other. And it's easy to do, you know, but it gets serious. Like, my show is not, it's not just like a bunch of, you know, penis jokes and mother-in-law jokes. It's like, it's some, you know, serious stuff. There's some like observational material. There is conceptual material. And if you know me as a performer, or writer, for my career, you know that I'm not like just the standard sort of like Def Jam, hip hop comedian. I'm a grown man. I have two grown kids. You know, I take shit seriously.
Yeah, and you've seen some stuff throughout your life as well. I forget what the podcast was, but I heard you talking about when you were 6 or 7 years old growing up in Detroit, going through the Detroit riots, which, of course, people read about in their history books. And you even remember the National Guard having to come in to calm things down. Do you remember having a conversation with your parents at that time about what was actually going on? Because that is a pretty crazy thing for a kid to have to go through.
Yeah, it was a trip. And, you know, I think like most parents in crisis, you know, they handled it like it was not anything abnormal. They were very like, we live our days like we live our days. We go to school, we eat dinner, we pray, whatever. But the sight of seeing tanks coming down the highway, the John C. Lodge, was, I just remember playing with my friends, like near, there was a big field near that highway that we would play football and stuff like that. And it was like, you looked out and we saw troops marching up and tanks and stuff. And it was like, you know, and the only thing I had to like reference it to was seeing stuff on the Vietnam War or a movie. So I was like, oh, this is like Vietnam, you know? But I wasn't, you know, smart enough to know like, this is like bad news, you know? But yeah, it's a trip growing up there during that period to see like, you know, South of City on fire, basically, you know, trip.
Slightly lighter note now, you were really starting to grind in comedy in Detroit before making the move to Chicago. And you do credit the Talking Heads film Stop Making Sense for really helping you to take that leap to go pursue that dream. What's your favorite Talking Heads song? And how often were you playing that album when you're working at a record store in Chicago before you finally got to be a part of the traveling tour for Second City?
Oh, man. I watched the Stop Making Sense movie. We used to put it on in the record store, just let it play all day. So I've seen it a million times. and I love Talking Heads so much. I mean, I think, you know, naive place or home, this is where I want to be. Probably my favorite song to play, and it just relaxes me and makes me worry less about life and time passing and that kind of stuff. But then like my quirkier favorite songs are like the song about buildings.
Life During Wartime is a really good one.
It's a great song. Big Country, that's a great one. I see the shapes I remember from maps. I see the shoreline. I see the white caps. The baseball diamond, nice weather down there. And then he goes, it just reminds me of this story too of Buddy Rich. You ever hear that story where he was like, I don't know how much long time we got, but he was talking about being in showbiz and he was on the road with his band and they were in the rain and the band broke down and they got out of the van and it was raining hard. And then him and some musicians were walking by this house in the suburbs and they were just soaking wet. And they looked in a window and saw this family eating dinner together quietly. And one of the musicians looked in and went, sighed heavily, like, oh boy. And then Buddy Rich looked in and he goes, yeah, I know. How do they live like that?
Great.
I love that story.
Great story. And David Byrne is obviously a great storyteller too. Considering how much time you spent in New York and how much of a New York City guy he was, did you ever get a chance to tell him that film meant to
you? No, I have not. And I was talking to somebody recently who had met him and stuff. And I've said it in interviews, like that movie, it was the propeller. It like made me leave Detroit because I thought, I had watched that movie a bunch of times and I thought those guys at one point decided, either we're going to be artists or we're going to be musicians in this band and we're going to do this thing. And there's one point they had to make a decision. And I felt like I was at that point in Detroit where it was like, either I'm going to stay in Detroit and become a journalist or whatever, or I'm going to keep pushing this improv thing and see how far I can go. And I gave myself 5 years to do it. And by the fifth year, I was on Saturday Night Live almost to the month. Almost to the day. It was that month in February. But I never got to meet David Byrne. And I also feel like if I ever met him, it would be really awkward because how do you tell somebody quickly within a few seconds, like, you changed my life. You changed my life. Watching you do Psycho Killer and Stop Making Sense made me want to become an actor and a comedian, you know?
I think that's how you say it right there. And he may leave it at that, or he may probe a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, I met Jerry Harrison once at Lollapalooza, and my girlfriend at the time was with me, and she knew I was a big fan. And I went up to him and I tried, he didn't know who I was. And I just started babbling like an idiot. And he was just like, he was like, yeah, okay, nice to meet you, pal. But yeah, it was just like to him, I was just like this guy just going, I love talking heads. I love talking heads. So anyways.
That's really cool. So,
Yeah.
speaking of Saturday Night Live, you've told countless stories on podcasts and whatnot, so I'm not going to have you repeat yourself here necessarily. I am curious to get your thoughts though, because a couple years ago, Shane Gillis was unceremoniously fired from that show shortly after being hired, based on something that had surfaced that he had said or done on a podcast. And in just a couple of weeks now, or less than 2 weeks, he's actually going to be hosting that show. That's pretty crazy turnaround, but it also goes to show that SNL goes through its ebbs and flows with not just the amount of talent on the show, but also what is deemed as acceptable versus what is not. What did you think when you saw that Shane Gillis is going to be hosting that show?
Well, I have to tell you, I don't know. I don't even know who Shane Gillis is. He was a comedian that was going to be hired to be in the cast.
Yeah, he was going to be a part of the cast, I believe, and in the writer's room. And then he got fired because some stuff surfaced
And
that.
so now he is a big enough star to host the show.
Yeah, just like 2 or 3 years later. Yeah, it's a pretty crazy turnaround.
Wow, what the fuck am I doing wrong?
You've got to say some really inflammatory stuff on a podcast, Tim. So let's hear it. Let's hear it.
I've been away from it for 20 years. I've never been asked to host. I guess I'm just not a big enough
It's
star.
ridiculous. You should at
Anyways.
some point. You're in Atlanta filming something right now. What are you filming?
I'm doing a Netflix movie right now.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know. I'm sorry. I know, not trying to put down any Shane Gillis or anybody else, but it's like, it's not my life anymore. So I really don't know. But if he says something, I don't know. I don't know, man. I don't know. You give somebody you can make a mistake and then apologize. And I think you should be able to like have a second chance. And, I'm sure he's not going to be saying the N-word on national TV. So, I don't know.
Or if he does, that'll be the last time he hosts SNL.
Well, I'm glad he was able to like rebound from his earlier, mistakes or whatever.
Well, and that's the bottom line too, because we reached a re weird point a few years ago where people were having their lives ruined from things that were maybe said like 5, 10 years ago on social media. Sometimes it's just like singing lyrics out loud. So the idea of forgiveness is important, that we shouldn't just look to just completely close the book on somebody because they make mistakes, because we all make mistakes. And anybody who wants to operate in this sanctimonious manner that they don't, well, they will eventually receive their comeuppance too in a lot of the cases.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And I'm sure the guy, it's like you can't, he probably was never expecting, something he would say years ago would like in be, affect his current career and stuff. I mean, we all make mistakes. We all say stupid shit, especially when you're young. You're trying to be shocking, you're trying to be edgy or whatever. And you realize like it just doesn't, being smarter is better. But I don't know the guy. I have to check him out. And obviously he's doing well. What is he in? He's like a stand-up comedian or a
Yeah, he's got a
movies.
couple stand-up specials. One's on YouTube. His most recent one is on Netflix. He's really funny. He is very
Yeah.
talented, but he also says some things that step over the line at times, which I think can be the point of comedy. Now, you can't just say ignorant, hateful stuff. You shouldn't be able to get away with that necessarily, but there is a way to talk about delicate issues and maybe offend some people with language if there is a larger point being made. And I think that overall, he does a pretty good job with those larger points in his stand-up.
That's good. Well, good luck to him and to you.
I appreciate that. Just a couple more questions here, Tim.
Okay,
Not
sure.
going to ask about the long list of IMDb stuff that you've been in, except for one thing. You
Okay.
did clash with Larry David on Curb Your Enthusiasm. That final season of Curb is happening right now. What was your experience like on the set of Curb?
I loved it. It was fun. It was one of the few things that I actually auditioned for. Like, I loved the show enough that I said, yes, I will come in and audition, even though I knew Dave Mandel, who was the showrunner at the time. And I knew Larry and I knew Jeff Garland. But I went in and read and improvised the scenes basically the way that it went in the show. They just told me, like, the notes of, like, Larry offended my wife's dog, and you run into him in the bathroom, and he asks you to apologize for him, and you tell him to do it himself. And that's exactly what I did. And then and I remember in the improv, I said something to him, like, do you have a problem apologizing to people with handicaps? And then he started riffing on different handicapped people that he'd offended and why he had a problem going back to apologize, which wasn't in the script at all. And he started laughing as he started telling me stories. And then he said he would go stop, catch himself. Then he'd go ask me that question again. And then I would repeat it, and then he would riff on it again. I don't know what they kept of that in the show, but I know, like, during the rehearsal when we were filming it, we both were breaking because it was very funny. And that's one reason, I love doing improv. I love setting people up. I love setting them up. And that's exactly what they wanted me to occur.
I would imagine it feels pretty good to be the one that is also really sticking it to the audience too and making them laugh. Even though you like to be the setup guy.
Yeah. No, it's fun being both, but we're doing an improv, and like, it's like watching a magic trick with two people, Like, the magician is going to get the big oohs and ahs, but the dude that's the setup dude is doing the work. He's doing, like, the heavy lifting, I call it sometimes, and that's not always rewarded, but there are some people that see it like me, and I'm a fan of people like that.
Accomplished people tend to think about questions, and there tends to be one question that overrides all others as you are going about your business. Is there any one question that you find yourself pondering more than the others right now, other than why did I decide to appear on this show?
No, but that I haven't pondered that yet. I don't know. And I've been wondering about a lot of stuff. I've been wondering, like, what are we doing as a country? That's all. What are we doing? Why are we doing this to ourselves? Why are, like, when we could make it so much better, it could be so much easier, why are we making it difficult on ourselves? That's all. I ponder that every day.
And finally, what do you love about stand-up, Tim?
I love that moment when I have the audience laughing so hard that they are trying to catch their breaths and they're telling me to stop talking till they can get oxygen. That's the moment. That's the thing I love about stand up. Those moments I love.
And you have a chance to let Tim take your breath away this weekend at Cap City Comedy Club. He has multiple shows this weekend on Friday, February 16th through Sunday, the 18th. Two shows Friday, two shows Saturday, and a single show on Sunday. Go to capcitycomedy.com to snag the tickets that remain. Also, for more info, Tim, thank you so much for the time today, man. Really enjoyed the conversation.
Good.
Safe travels to and from Austin.
All right. Thanks a lot. Good seeing you.
Thanks to Gentleman Jesus for the intro and outro music. Hear more of his work at gentlemanjesus.com. Thanks to you for hanging out. For more of the show and to connect on social media, visit booksonpod.com. Talk to you next time, Books on Pod.